You're listening to Trek FM.
Imagine a world where new frontiers are discovered and explored. All children are given the chance to thrive. Our environment is treasured and preserved. Everybody is given a chance to prosper. Disease is a thing of the past. Quality education is accessible to all. And innovation and imagination are valued. I'm Christopher Jones, and this is Trek FM's Matter Stream. On Matter Stream, we look at the people and issues that have been influenced by Star Trek and the ideas that move us forward. The ideals that I just listed should be familiar to all Trekkers. They are, of course, the embodiment of Gene Roddenberry's vision of the future. But they're more than just part of Star Trek. They're also the ideals that guide the Roddenberry Foundation, the nonprofit philanthropic group founded by Gene's son, Rod Roddenberry. I recently sat down with Rod to talk about the foundation, how it started, and how it supports those working to make the vision of a better future a reality. Hello, Rod. Thank you for taking some time to join me today on Trek FM. It's just a real pleasure to talk to you.
No, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Great. I was so happy to hear that you would be able to come on. The news recently about the Gladstone Institute and the donation that the Roddenberry Foundation made really caught my attention. And I've been a lifelong Star Trek fan ever since I was a kid, going back to the reruns of the original series long before the Next Generation came on. And you know, one of the things that always drew me to Star Trek, especially as I got into high school age, was its power as a social commentary and the idea of a better future. Mm-hmm. And now with the Roddenberry Foundation, you're really bringing these ideals beyond the screen, beyond Star Trek itself, and affecting real change in the world. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about what led you to establish the foundation.
Well, you've said it pretty well already, but as far as establishing it goes, of course, you know, my mother and father have both passed, and they've contributed a tremendous amount to society, humanity, in their own way through Star Trek. As you've already said, Star Trek is really about inspiration, in my opinion. Sci-fi is secondary, but showing the potential of what humanity is capable of, showing the potential of what people are capable of, what individuals are capable of. That's the real message that's kind of inlaid in the subtext and metaphors. And I want to carry on that tradition, but I'm not a Hollywood producer. I'm no good at it. I don't like the nonsense that happens. I'm dabbling in a few more independent type things that we might talk about later. But for right now, I really wanted to take the next steps with the Roddenberry name, the Roddenberry philosophy, as I call it, which was to establish the foundation, an organization that is investing in that future, looking for long-term solutions, teaming up with organizations and companies that are on the cutting edge of innovation and technology. We really want to make that future a reality. And, you know, it may be beyond our lifetime. I'm not looking for an easy cure. I'm not looking, well, it would be nice if we could solve world diseases overnight and get them done in no time. But we're looking long term. We want humanity to benefit in the long term. It's great if it happens in the short term, but we're not fooling ourselves thinking that we're going to change the world overnight. But we're really banking on the people who are so inspired by the Roddenberry philosophy, who now, I mean, from my experience, I've met people who didn't necessarily believe that they could do anything, and then one day saw Star Trek, and whether it was to look beyond a personal handicap or reach beyond their perceived limitations at the time and become an astronaut or a doctor or a lawyer, whatever the case may be, we're looking to those people now and saying, you've made that change. Now let's work together to actually affect real change in the world. So the Roddenberry Foundation does more than just contribute, but we contribute financially to organizations out there that are on the cutting edge of technology, that are working for a long-term solution to our world's problems and needs. It's really what I should have just said that to begin with.
Yeah, but that's a great background to the whole thought process and how you're furthering the ideals that your father, Gene, had when he created Star Trek and has grown over the years. And so let's, talking about working with these different organizations in different fields, one thing I wanted to ask you about was that the foundation supports a very wide range of different efforts, be they medicine or exploration of the oceans, feeding hungry children, but they all fall under what you call the four Roddenberry pillars.
Yes.
And can you tell me a little bit more about those pillars and how they guide the mission of the foundation?
Well, I'll read them off to you, and then we'll go into them. Obviously, it's not obvious. Science and technology is one of them. The environment is another. Education, the third, and humanitarian advances is the fourth. And there's a lot of overlap when you start exploring the organizations and people out there who are working in these areas. So we feel that these four areas cover all. I should be careful what I say here, but I believe, depending on how you define them, they should cover sort of every aspect of humanity to a degree. You know, the environment, of course, we cover everything on the planet, everything environmentally related, no matter how big or small. Science and technology, that's somewhat self-explanatory, but whether it's space exploration or medicine, whatever the case may be. Now, medicine crosses over into humanitarian advances. Whether we're looking for the cure for diseases or how to get fresh water to places in other countries that don't have that. And education, I mean, education for me is the big one. What I mean by education is just awareness, life experience. It doesn't mean giving everyone the ability to go to high school and college. I mean, that's great too, but you become educated by experiencing life, being exposed to new circumstances. And that's really sort of my grand view of education. I want people to explore their world, to explore themselves. If we were, if the cavemen didn't leave their cave, they wouldn't ever grow. They wouldn't educate themselves. They wouldn't have experiences, and they wouldn't evolve. I want us to evolve as a species, and that doesn't just mean a college education. That means getting out there and experiencing new things. Experiencing new things is how you'll grow and evolve as a person. I don't even know if I answered your question, but it was a rambling that I did.
Well, you covered the four pillars, and like you said, they do all in some way tie together because, again, like science and technology, like with the Gladstone Institutes where you're talking about stem cell research. In science and technology, do you see the foundation in the future moving into areas of space exploration as the space industry becomes privatized over time?
I don't want to say yes or no to any of that. It's entirely possible, absolutely. But we want to make sure that if we're moving into privatized space exploration, it is somehow benefiting humanity as a whole long term. And that's, you can rationalize things and argue things that it will, of course. But it's just very important that we stay true to our mission, we stay true to our philosophy, and that we can easily point to defining points in our actions that substantiate our pillars, if that made any sense.
Yeah, that makes great sense. And I think it would be a natural evolution, of course, for a foundation that grew from the Star Trek ideals as that moves forward in time. Hopefully, of course, the foundation will have a long, long life to see that through.
Absolutely.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, because in addition to yourself, okay, the foundation was formed in 2010. Is that correct? The official formation of the foundation was in 2010?
Yes, it was. That is correct.
So I noticed that you, of course, but also your father, Gene, and your mother, who's the very beloved Majel Barrett Roddenberry, who yeah. All Star Trek fans love, are listed as the founders. And of course, your mother passed away in 2008. And I was wondering, did the two of you work together on discussing the idea of the foundation, the planning of the foundation, prior to when we lost her?
No, unfortunately not. The real genesis of this did come after their passing. They were both, philanthropic mm-hmm. in their own way, for sure. But it really formed afterwards with the help of my other two directors, Mort Kessler and Andy Garb, who are not just friends of the family, not just supporters of the family. They're fans. They get the philosophy. They understand what my father was trying to achieve. They're inspired by what he did. They believe in that future. And so the three of us have come together to really make the foundation what it is. And we work so well together. It's fantastic. There is almost we're almost of one mind when it comes to developing these things, when it comes to deciding in which direction to take the foundation.
And that's the most powerful way to move forward, no doubt. Another thing I wanted to ask you about was, if we just look at the most recent grant that you gave, which was $5 million to the Gladstone Institutes. For those who don't know, the Gladstone Institutes are a nonprofit biomedical research organization, and they're doing stem cell research with, I think, an aim towards cardiovascular and neurological diseases,
yep,
primarily. Using them as an example and talking about also the bigger picture of the foundation, how did the Roddenberry Foundation and Gladstone come to join forces, and what is the process that the foundation goes through to identify candidates and select the grantees that you choose to work with?
Well, I'm going to rudely jump in before I answer that question, and I just want to make sure that the listeners out there they understand something that I didn't initially understand, and some of them may, some of them may not. But, you know, stem cell research has been controversial for many years because originally it came from embryonic stem cells, fetuses, and that's a hot topic. And we weren't really on board, and I'm not going to argue one way or the other, at least not on this show. But we didn't want to go down that road. However, the reason we came on board was because there was a new way of producing stem cells, and these were called pluripotent stem cells as opposed to embryonic. The pluripotent stem cells have nothing to do with a fetus and are taken from an adult male or female skin or any sort of cell from an adult individual. And they can reverse engineer this cell into a stem cell and then program it to become any other kind of cell, whether it's a heart cell or a lung cell or a brain cell. And when we went to Gladstone and took a tour of the facility, and of course we had this explanation, we did our homework, we talked to a number of scientists, they showed us through a microscope a sheet of beating heart cells, actually beating, that had been taken from adult male skin cell. And the implications of that were astonishing. You know, again, nothing's happening overnight, but the idea of growing a lung or a heart or something in a lab is a reality in the future. I'm not saying it's around the corner. There's a lot of work to still be done, but these people are really on the cutting edge. And so that is really one of the reasons we came on board. And there's things that they can even do today that are much more, I guess I should say, tangible in science and medicine, which is there's people with diseases. Let's just say someone has a disease. There's many, many different kinds of medicines they can be given that might be effective on that disease. Well, there's a lot of, you can't give that person, you know, 20 different pills and just sort of human test them. What they can do is they can take a skin cell from that person, reverse engineer into the affected tissue, organ, whatever the case may be, and then they can test these medicines on those cells to see what the reaction is and find the best possible one. That is actually right around the corner, and that is going to be a game changer in science and medicine. So that is what's really exciting. I am not a doctor, so if there's anyone else there listening and I sound crazy, the only thing I ask you to do is to research Gladstone Institute and their program and verify that for yourself. But I've been blown away by what they've said.
That's really amazing. I mean, that is Star Trek.
That is Star Trek right there.
That's just absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, I thank you for providing that background because, you know, myself, I hear stem cells and I didn't know about this particular, you know, reverse engineering technology. Which is a wonderful thing to know that exists now because there's so much promise in stem cell research and benefit to it. And if there is a way to do it that is maybe less controversial like that. Wonderful. So, and a great to know that the Roddenberry Foundation is supporting that as well. Amazing Star Trek stuff there. So,
it really is. We're making it a reality, all of us.
So, generally speaking, when you identify potential grantees, what is the process like? How do you go about identifying, or how do those people approach the Roddenberry Foundation?
Well, we're still young. As you said, we were set up in 2010, and while a year and a bit sounds like a lot of time, it's really not when you're talking about a foundation. There's a lot of work. There's a lot of regulation. The government doesn't make it easy for us to do what we want to do. Just because of the way things were set up in the past, people took advantage of the system, and the government had to step in and put a lot of regulation. Anyhow, right now, people can't really reach out to us. If they want to go to RoddenberryFoundation.org, they can send us an email, and we will look at the email and of course, reach out to them should we feel there's further direction to go with them. And we will have something in place later on that's sort of a submission process for anyone out there who's interested in knowing more or whether their organization fits our criteria, et cetera. But right now the process is we're looking. I'm interested in the oceans, and I'm involved with some environmental organizations. So we investigate them. We talk to them. We go out and we say, hey, what are you guys doing? What's on the cutting edge? What's your long-term vision? What's your long-term goal? How will this benefit humanity? And if they come back to us with a good explanation and what fits our criteria, we take it to the next level. So right now we're just out there looking. And when you get into the philanthropy community, it is a smaller world, and you get a lot of referrals. And a lot of foundations out there have worked with other foundations, have worked with organizations, and we've been able to connect with a few individuals from different foundations who we can trade information. You know, we're looking for something in the environmental. Do you know of anyone out there who's not just lining their pockets with money, but is actually philanthropic and trying to do the world good? And so that's how we do it right now. But as the years go on, we'll become more structured, more formalized. It'll be easier for people to reach out to us, and hopefully us to reach out to them. It'll just be more evident and clear to people how we operate.
So right now, it's all you exploring and...
Sure, sure. And I don't want to take the credit. It's not just me exploring. My other two directors, and of course, Janice Minton Consulting, who has helped us form the Roddenberry Foundation. She has been phenomenal. And every time we find someone that we're interested in knowing more about, we kind of send it her way, and she sort of vets them and does some digging for us.
So a very team effort, no doubt.
Yes, absolutely.
At the foundation. Great. Well, last question on the foundation here, and
sure.
We covered this a little bit already, but if there's anything additional that you want to add, where do you see the foundation going in the future?
That's a tough question. You know, I initially was going to say, like, oh, this big organization that's changing the world. But we don't have to be big to change the world. We want to have a big reach. We want to have a constant message. We want to make sure people out there have heard of us, know that what we're doing. We want them to be inspired by the Roddenberry Foundation, just as they've been inspired by Star Trek and the Roddenberry philosophy. We want them to believe that that future is a possibility and have hope for that future. I think inspiration is something that's not utilized or reflected on that often. It is a powerful tool. For someone to believe in themselves or believe in the people around them is extremely powerful. And it's I've heard so many amazing stories. You started our call off with how Star Trek inspired you. It's just, there's so many phenomenal stories out there of people who didn't think they could, through Star Trek, believed in themselves and have achieved because of that. And that, I am so proud of my father for doing that, that I just want to carry that on in every way that I can.
Oh, absolutely. It's really the incarnation of Star Trek in the real world, in a sense. So many people think of Star Trek as like, it's all make-believe. Or I remember growing up that my mother was, all she saw in Star Trek were funny-looking aliens with bumps on their heads, right? It's like a lot of people take it as a just like a play world, but here with the Roddenberry Foundation, it is like the true meaning of Star Trek. It's exploration of humanity, what I always call the core of Star Trek, incarnate in the real world. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I'll let other people start the Federation of Planets and all that. We're going to work on just making that future happen.
You're not going to start the Federation yourself, okay?
No,
You're not going to go find the Vulcans and the Tellarites and
no, there's plenty of other people to do that.
All right, good idea. Okay, well, Rod, you have another big event coming up at the end of this month on November 30th,
as
the Trek Nation premieres on Science Channel.
I'm very excited.
I know this is something you've been working on for a very long time, and how do you feel seeing this finally come to fruition and ready to be shared with the millions of Star Trek fans all around the world?
I have a plethora of feelings. I have been working on it for a long time with an amazing team of individuals who each and every one of them, this sounds like a line, but I mean it with all my heart, without each and every one of them, it wouldn't have gotten done. Pull any one of these people out and it wouldn't have happened. I'm extremely excited. I'm nervous. You know, all the feelings are there. It's been about 10 years since we started this, and I can't say that we've been working on it solid for 10 years, but what I can tell you is that my initial inspiration was the documentary Trekkies. Mm-hmm. And I'll let me be clear about that. You know, my experience up to that point, I'll take it back just a little bit further. After my father passed away, let me take it back a little further even. As a young kid, I didn't know Star Trek. I didn't get Star Trek. I knew my father produced it, but I was a rebellious kid. I wanted to do my own thing, so I never watched it. Well, I didn't never watch it, but I just didn't care. It wasn't until after he passed away that I began to sort of open my eyes and ears. I was 17 at the time, and hear about all these stories about people being inspired. And I was a little shocked that this TV show could do it. And then beyond that, I was shocked that my father had created this TV show that inspired so many. So I spent the years after that, many years after that, sort of going to conventions and talking to fans or talking to family, talking to friends, other people in the industry, and learning a tremendous amount about Star Trek and how it touched lives. I became so proud of the name, so proud of what it was. And all the fans were phenomenal. So let me take it back to Trekkies. Trekkies was this documentary that came out, and it was good, you could say. It was a well-done documentary, but it showed the extreme sides of fandom, and I think it sensationalized fandom, you know, to sell tickets. And I was very bothered by that at the time, because I was very raw with my emotion. Fans had taught me everything I knew about my father in Star Trek, and I felt very indebted to them. And I also, all my experiences had been amazing. You know, I knew fans who dressed up as Klingons on the weekend, but were lawyers during the week. You know, they were down to earth people who simply had a passion. And you can draw many parallels to what they did. If you go to any football game and you see everyone with their face painted and their shirts off and all that stuff, or if you go anytime you pass a guy who's riding a Harley on the road that's got a beard and a leather vest and chaps or whatever the case, I mean, that's a costume. The best thing about Star Trek fans is a majority of them believe in this future, and a lot of them are working in organizations that are trying to make that future reality too. They're working in charities. A lot of the Klingons I know, they work with underprivileged children, and they take them out on weekends and things like that. So, I mean, I have a lot of admiration for the fans. So, sorry, I can ramble sometimes.
No worries. That's very interesting.
So, Trek Nation, my initial thing was to make it about the diversity of fans and how it's touched people from all walks of life. Then I found my co-producer, Scott Colthorpe, and he came on board saying, we need to make this a father searching to understand who his father was. And at the time, it seemed weird to involve myself in it, but I kind of went with it. And we spent many years only at conventions doing interviews. until we got a lot of fan interviews and decided we needed to take it to the next level and interview celebrities or football players. I mean, the diversity of people out there who like Star Trek is really staggering. You've got politicians, you've got religious leaders from different religions, you've got people from all social, economic, ethnic backgrounds, you've got fans all over the world, Playboy bunnies, football stars, I mean, you name it, we found fans everywhere. And we wanted to kind of interview all these different people and make that one connection, how they all share this commonality of believing in this future, of us all working together for the greater good. And that was the message we really wanted to get out there. And I'm rambling here, but the father-son angle came into it. And, well, we did a lot of interviews. We had hundreds of hours of interviews and then decided to get to the editing bay and start putting this thing together. And it really took shape in the editing bay. I was going to say, long story short, that's too late. You go ahead with the next question, and I'll fill it in.
What do you
hope?
I was going to ask you what did the process mean to you, but I think I know that. But what did you find? I wanted to ask you two questions. I wanted to ask you what you found yourself through the whole process. What did you discover that? And also, what do you hope that the fans take away from the documentary after they see it?
You know, there's so much that I got that so many will never get, only because I was knee deep in it for 10 years. And trying to condense the Star Trek phenomenon, my father's entire life, into a 90-minute segment is impossible, literally. So picking and choosing what was going to be in there was just so painful. But luckily, our editors at New Animal really brought it to life. Okay, so the most important thing to me, and the thing that I took away, how do I not ramble about this? You know, my father had been presented to me as the great bird of the galaxy, visionary, genius. He was put so high up on a pedestal that there was no way I could identify with him. You know, again, he passed away when I was 17. And the years before that, he was pretty much an authority figure. You don't really get to know the man behind your father until you're much older, at least in most cases, I believe.
Right, right.
And so I didn't get to know the man, and this was my chance to get to know him. So he had been presented to me by so many people as this Greek god almost, that I had no idea who he was. Through this interview process and talking to people who knew him well or worked directly with him, you know, I really got to learn more about the man. And one thing that I actually wanted to do was I needed to find out his weaknesses, his follies, his flaws. I wasn't trying to trash my father, but what I was really trying to do was humanize him. The minute I was able to learn of his weaknesses and his faults and his flaws, that brought him down to a level that I could see and identify with. That made him more human to me. And I was able to finally see that this flawed human being, like we all are, still through tenacity and drive and vision, was still able to have this view of the future and get it out there. That is what made him so remarkable. And that's what allowed me to love him. I can identify with a flawed human being who has greatness within. And I want the audience to take that away too. While I understand that no one out there thinks he was a god, I don't want them to necessarily revere him as much as they do, respect and admire, but I want them to believe in themselves that they too can do that. We all kind of look at ourselves and we think, God, I could never do that. I could never be as great as that person. Yes, you can. Gene Roddenberry was a fantastic human being who was flawed and made mistakes and did, I don't want to say bad things, but as bad as we all do, but still had this amazing vision of the future and got it out there. You know, again, to be clear, he was not a bad person. He was just a human who made mistakes like we all are.
He was a normal person.
A normal person. Ultimately.
That's
what I want people to walk away with. Just, again, it comes to inspiration. My God, he did all that and made mistakes. Well, damn, anyone can do that. That's what I want them to weigh. You know, I can be great.
Yes, this sounds like a great documentary because not only can the fans appreciate that and have that takeaway from it, but you as making it obviously went on a journey yourself. I'm very looking forward to seeing it when it gets out here. And I wish I had Science Channel here in Japan.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
I think I have access through iTunes.
Good. Yeah, for those of you in the U.S., of course, it'll be November 30th at 8 mm-hmm. p.m. on Science. I get in trouble if I don't plug it. Those of you not in the U.S., it'll get to you. I don't know when, but I'll make sure somehow it gets to you.
There will be a DVD release at some point, I would assume, right?
There's definitely going to be a DVD release at some point. I wouldn't expect it too soon after it comes out, just because we do have so much extra footage. And I'm not talking about just extra B-roll. I mean, we have so many phenomenal interviews. So many people that knew my father so intimately that didn't make it into this cut. I'm ashamed to say it because some of them are my friends and I don't know what to say to them.
But you only have 90 minutes to work with.
I have 90 minutes to work with.
10 years of work and 90 minutes to present it. So, of course, that's going to happen.
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, Rod, thank you once again so much for taking some time to talk to us today. And just the work that you're doing, both with Trek Nation, which sounds amazing, and with Roddenberry Foundation, of bringing Gene Roddenberry's vision of a better future to life. Just, it means so much to all of us, all the fans, and to the world. And just on behalf of all the fans, I did want to just say thank you for all of your efforts in, you know, keeping Gene's visions alive and helping to make that better world that we see in Star Trek a reality.
Thank you. Well, let me just turn it right back on you and quickly say that I did learn through Trek Nation. I had an opportunity that so few have. I was able to learn and love my father because of the stories I got through fandom and the people who knew him. And it's the fans who taught me about Star Trek, and it's the fans who taught me about Roddenberry. They're the ones that made me look for this. And they're the ones who told me, you know, this was much more than just science fiction. So, I really give credit to all the admirers of Star Trek and Roddenberry out there. I thank you. I can't thank you enough.
That was Rod Roddenberry, founder of the Roddenberry Foundation and CEO of Roddenberry Productions. If you'd like to learn more about the Roddenberry Foundation, you can visit roddenberryfoundation.org, and you can find out more about all of Rod's projects, including Trek Nation, Gene's Journal, and the Roddenberry Dive Team at roddenberry.com. Now, if you're looking for more Star Trek discussion, be sure to check out our other long-form show, The Ready Room, where we discuss Star Trek news, episodes, characters, and, you know, just basically geek out every Tuesday. You'll find this, along with all sorts of other Star Trek shows and games and features, on our website at trek.fm. And you can also get enhanced versions of our podcasts in iTunes. Plus, you'll find us on Twitter at username trekfm, talking about Star Trek around the clock. And that's it for our show. A huge thanks to Rod Roddenberry for taking the time to talk with us, and I hope you all enjoyed it as much as I did. For Trek FM, I'm Christopher Jones. I'll see you next time for another dip into the Matter Stream.